Hello, and welcome to Fuzzing, or How I Generated a Million New Emulated Test Cases in an Afternoon. My name is Thomas Hart, and this is FOSDEM 2022. So, a quick introduction to emulation in the sense that I am using it for this presentation. Emulation is the act of picking some other computer system, different from the one you're writing code for, and finding a way to make that computer system software run on your system. Typically, that involves at least one code stream that you need to interpret or translate. For example, the other machine has, say, an ARM CPU, and the one you're writing code for has an x86 CPU, so you need to solve the problem of how do I run ARM code on x86. And your emulator will also require, you know, a good software model of anything else that was in the system besides the processor or processors, video output, audio output, external buses, you get it, the whole lot. So emulation is atypical in that, unlike most other pieces of software you might write for a bit of fun, the specifications were set in stone, possibly a very long time ago, and they are the same specifications that are applied by everybody else who writes an emulator of the same platform. So we're in a world where there are a bunch of people independently trying to write software that matches the same specification. The outcome of that has been a propagation of shared tests. For any sufficiently popular platform, there are usually a bevy of system tests which can be run either on the original hardware or in any piece of software that claims to emulate it, and will test a wide range of parts of the system and give you usually just a thumbs up or thumbs down. So the disadvantages of those, obviously, they're the system tests, so they're helpful only relatively late in the day. You pretty much have to have your whole emulator constructed before they're all that informative. So an example of such a system test is Zexal, which is the common shortened name for the Z80 instruction exerciser. As I've written at the top there, it's from quote-unquote antiquity, which in this case means the early to mid-90s, which in terms of popular emulator authorship is antiquity. And Zexal tests a Z80 processor in a CPM environment. So CPM is like the pre-MS-DOS operating system of small home computer choice. It has a basic hardware abstraction layer. That is the environment in which this test expects to run. And what the test does is it divides the Z80 instruction set into 67 different buckets, that is, assuming I can count, fingers crossed. One such is, as on screen, the set of all instructions that are either set or res of any value n. In fact, there's only 8 values because this is set or reset of a bit, on any of the 8-bit registers or an 8-bit read, modify, write via HL, which is, you'll see the Z80 is x86-ish. This is a very common pattern for Z80 instructions. So for each of its 67 buckets, Zexal will run a barrage of tests, which is certainly a very high number of the potential inputs in order to capture all of the potential outputs and of those tests anyway, generate a CRC32 of all of those. And then within the environment it is running, it will compare the CRC32 it just calculated to a known good one from a real Z80. It does so many tests, it takes many, many hours to complete on a real system. And here is an interesting fact about it. Although it was written in the early 90s originally, nobody completely passed it until the late noughties because of an obscure internal register in the Z80 that leaks into the status register on some occasions. But to quote the original author, Frank D. Kringle, the program is designed to detect differences between implementations and is not ideal for diagnosing the causes of any discrepancies. And that is the issue that I take with this test and with others like it. Good test cases should be ideal for diagnosing the causes of any discrepancies. Very good test cases should be so straightforward to use that as soon as you make some sort of regression or other coding error, you will instantly be told what you did wrong. That's the dream, and that is what we are hopefully going to pitch towards during the rest of this presentation. So how can we do better without necessarily being more intelligent people? Well, this is my suggestion. Take a known good emulator, which for the sake of this slide, we'll just assume is one that already passes all other known test cases, I will come back to the concept of known good, no need to shout out, and from there randomly generate a current processor state, so that's likely to be a random fill of all the public registers, certainly, maybe some internal ones if that's relevant. Randomly generate an instruction, so you need to know something about how instructions are encoded on that particular processor. And from then on, you're going to run for one instruction, and anytime the processor does a read, you're going to randomly generate the value that it reads, and anytime that it writes, you're just going to store the value. So I hope there are no quantum physicists listening to this, because they will probably laugh me out of the room for trying to make this comparison, but imagine that all values external to the processor begin in a quantum state, so as soon as they're observed, they become fixed, and or indeed you can just write them. After you've run that one instruction, you're going to record the end state, including anything that happened to, well, externally to the processor, and the current state inside the processor. And then you're just going to do that again and again and again, until you've done, well, hundreds or thousands or millions of these things. Okay, but I don't just want to assert that I'm doing better, I want to argue that I'm doing better, and I believe that these test cases are better for the following reasons. Number one, they allow you to proceed with test-driven development. That is to say, after you've written an implementation of any given instruction, you can immediately run all of the test cases against it and find out whether there are any discrepancies between your implementation and the alternate one that is already known to pass all other existing test cases. And furthermore, if there are any discrepancies, then you can immediately see, specifically, before the instruction executed, state was X. After the instruction executed, my state was Y, but it should have been Z, so what are the differences there, and what does that imply that I might have done wrong? And furthermore, because we're doing this quote-unquote at scale, you have an arbitrarily low probability of having missed any weird edge cases in the instructions. As an obvious example, imagine the processor has a divide instruction and it has a divide by zero exception. Well, you're going to want to make sure you hit one of the cases where the thing you're dividing by is zero. To try to miss any similar edge cases, you just want to whack up the number of cases that you generate. Okay, so here's a specific example that I prepared earlier. This one relates to the 6502 processor, which is almost 50 years old, unless my mental arithmetic is failing me, and therefore is a toy processor by modern standards. I mean, there's less than 256 instructions total. In fact, there's only something like 150 official ones, then, because this processor predates those that have sufficiently many transistors to catch illegal instructions, it will attempt to do something for most of the other single-byte opcodes, but some of them just cause the processor to go into an infinite loop, so they're not really counted. So just less than 256 instructions total. The processor has no cache, no prefetch. It is purely in order sequential processor, meaning that the initial state is very simple, and so is the closing state. So to provide such test cases for 6502 and other members of the 6502 family, I generated 10,000 tests per opcode across five different members of the 6502 family. I should mention there are various descendants of it, but I was looking only at the very simple 8-bit ones, so nothing after about, I don't know, 1986 or so. So therefore I generated 10,000 tests per instruction, or per opcode would be a more accurate way of stating it, times almost 256, times 5, because I was doing 5 different versions of the 6502, which is actually a bit less than 12.8 million tests, so I undersold myself on the first page, but that number is just weirdly specific. So then here's a quick sample test that was randomly generated in order to underline what I'm doing here, in case I'm not up to explaining things as well as I think I am. It is a JSON object, and it has the following fields. A name, that's useful for discussion. It has the initial processor state. So in this case, it's only a 6502. You can see it's got a 16-bit program counter. It's got an S register, which is an 8-bit stack pointer. It only has a 2/6-byte stack, even though the stack lives in memory. The accumulator, the X register, the Y register, they're all just 8 bits. And P is the status register on a 6502, so that is all the current processor flags. And then also in the initial state, I have a bunch of pairs of values that should exist in RAM before attempting to execute one instruction. They're paired as address value. As you can see, there are in fact five of them, which is probably one too many for this instruction, but it really doesn't matter. This is one of the advantages of just generating these things randomly. Generate too many random values, it's fine. They don't affect the output. Then we skip down to the final state. That should be the final state of the processor after executing the instruction SBC, which is subtract with carry, from the address of string FO, X, which will be the hexadecimal value F0 plus the current value of the X register modulo 256. And, that's the final register state. And then those are all the values that should be in RAM afterwards. You'll notice they're in a different order this time than they were originally. That's fine. I mean, that doesn't need to be deterministic, and if it does, then it's pretty easy to fix. And at the bottom is a breakdown of the bus cycles that this 6502 will have performed in order to get to there. So it will have read the value 245 from the address 3028. Again, this is all JSON, so all numbers are decimal, which is a bit weird, but best to use a standard format than to worry about little issues like that. Then it read from 3029, so at that point it's probably read the SBC FO, because it's a two-byte instruction. Then it will have performed a read from 240, which is the wrong address to read from, but this is one of the disadvantages of this very old processor. It is very bus inefficient. And then it will have done the real read from address 253, and then internally it will have done the actual subtract, but that's not a bus cycle, that's not visible externally. So, I didn't just generate that test for the sake of making this presentation a bit more interesting. As the earlier slide said, I generated 12.8 million of these tests, and I released them in order to try to help the community as a whole, and that leads to the main lesson learnt, i.e. the limitations of known good. And I'm sure that a large proportion of the audience will have been ahead of me on this. There was an assumption much earlier on that the piece of software that is being used to generate the test cases passes all known test cases. And in my case, it turns out that wasn't actually true. I had missed an issue with decimal arithmetic on the 6502 class processors. There was an issue in the original 6502 where decimal arithmetic didn't set the flags in a way that would be as useful as it might be, so they modified that logic between the original and the subsequent CMOS versions. That means that the tests I put out are going to have to be revised. I'm going to have to possibly run some other emulator to generate the test cases, or just find better documentation. That's probably the better solution. I think, though, that the main point to take away from here is that there is a general risk with this approach that it is only as good as the emulator used to generate it. And you definitely could use real hardware, but we're talking about hundreds of megabytes or possibly even gigabytes of output data that may take a very, very, very long time to generate on real hardware, much like Zexal did. So, having learnt that lesson, or at least mentally adjusted myself to it to the extent that it wasn't obvious in the first place, the question is where next? For me personally, I have software models of the Z80, the 65816, and the 68000 that I intend to use to augment the repository that I'm going to give you on the next slide. And of course, there are a million things in emulated systems other than CPUs. It would be nice to have similar, you know, before and after a single step of those type test cases. Off the top of my head, the VDP, the TMS9918 pops up a lot. There's a whole bunch of sound chips. It would be good to generate output tests for those, especially the OPLs. But the main reason that I am giving this speech is not to say, woohoo, look at me. It's to try to spread the idea so that other people can hopefully do the same thing with their good code, hopefully better than my code, and release them to help the rest of the community and thereby just generally improve the world in a very, very, very slender way. And please give me a shout if you fancy shouting at me.